I really appreciate this analogy of the naturalist for a way to think about practice. We are quite literally nature ourselves. We're no different in a way from a forest or a desert or something that has processes of, processes that function in it. We are a set of processes that just are tumbling on. And so this notion of just kind of sitting in the midst of nature, curious about what shows up in a naturalist sitting in nature, they may at times be very spacious and kind of settled back, almost just receptive for whatever is available. And then perhaps a little creature comes out, a little creature appears and starts to do some things. And at that point, the naturalist maybe very naturally focuses in, observes that creature, looks at how it relates to things. So this kind of shift, we don't have to preference any particular way of how our mindfulness works. Sometimes it will be broad, receptive, spacious. Sometimes the attention will quite naturally aim in and be curious about some particular aspect of experience, without our consciously choosing to do that, even. It's very naturally our awareness can shift from in that way that I described on Sunday, from seeing to looking, for instance, from hearing to listening. When the conditions arise in a particular way, our attention will naturally be drawn to certain things. We neither have to hold on to that or push it away. Just very naturally see how our system responds to what's arising. Curious about the arisings, curious about what is happening in our experience. I like this analogy of the naturalist too, because I think of a naturalist as being very, very curious and non-interfering in the way they engage in nature. They're there to just observe, not to fix anything or change anything or take a piece of nature back to the laboratory and grind it up and figure out how it's constructed or composed. It's really just what shows up in nature. So it's that kind of observation, not the dive in, figure out, pull apart, which we can. Tend to, we can do we can do that with our attention. We can focus our attention and aim at particular things, and there are forms of meditation practice that use that capacity. This one is more preferencing the non-interference of just what's arising, just what's coming up. And yet, as with the naturalist, if you're sitting in a forest, for instance, and you smell smoke, you're probably not going to just keep sitting there. You're going to, get out of the way so that, you don't get burned down if a fire comes through. So, we have to have some wisdom about when it makes sense to just sit there and observe and when it makes sense to take some action. So I just offer that reflection for your for an image for you to contemplate in terms of how you're exploring practice. So some questions. There are some questions from the submitted from the online forum. So I'll start with some of those. What is the role of concepts in this practice? It's interesting and relaxing to practice open awareness without mental labeling. Labeling provides instant feedback that reassures the mind that it is mindful and here is the object, but it takes effort and thought. In this practice, is it recommended to explicitly register an experience as seeing, or is this receptive mindfulness simpler than that? My sense is that we're just allowing what's obvious to be happening without necessarily producing any thoughts, explicit perceptions about it. So I think this is referring to some extent to this labeling is referring to some practices which use a mental noting or labeling to support the mindfulness as a kind of a tool. In certain practices, when you notice something that's arising, you use a perception or a recognition. This is what's happening. You name it in your mind. So you're using thoughts in your mind to support the mind to stay present. This practice does not explicitly encourage that. Now, you may notice if you've done that kind of practice, you might notice that it happens. You know, you might notice that you find your mind as you're without even consciously doing it. You know, so you may find as you're just observing, recognizing what's happening, you see or hear or experience your mind kind of naming. Oh, you know, anger's happening right now. You know, so you may notice that. You may notice that kind of labeling happens. That can happen because we have practiced it, because it's familiar, because that's what we tend to do, you know, what we have conditioned our minds to do in a meditative state. That can happen because of that. But it also can happen quite naturally just because perception recognizes things and sometimes uses words to recognize them. We can notice this, for instance, if we're sitting and meditating. I notice this particularly easily, I'd say, around the field of hearing. So I'm sitting and meditating and, the sound of a bird arises. And I may hear my mind say bird, or I may see an image of a bird in my mind, if particular birds, I know what they look like. And so, you know, I hear the sound of a crow and an image of a crow pops into my mind. This is a form of perception. This is a natural process of our minds that happens. So we don't have to stop that from happening. If you notice that, you're noticing something, you're noticing a way that your mind functions. This process of perception, of recognizing what goes on around us, is a natural and very useful part of what our minds do. And they will do it without our involvement. And so sometimes what I ask people, if you know, they talk about, I find myself naming or noting everything. You know, I find myself labeling things that are happening. And I, you know, you're just curious about that. I sometimes will ask, are you doing it? Are you trying to do it? You know, that it can happen as a kind of a habit from the mental noting, but it also can just be this process of perception being revealed when we become more mindful. Though, you know, as we become more attentive to what's happening, this is one of the things we start to see. We see how the mind recognizes experience. We can see how the mind makes mistakes about recognizing experience at times, how it tries on various different perceptions before it finally lands. It goes, oh yeah, that's what it is. So at one point I was meditating in a room that was a little bit different for me than I was usually meditating in. And I heard this hum sound and my mind, identified it as airplane. You know, that's what the mind recognized. It created an image of an airplane. And then seconds later, I felt this cold blast on the back of my neck. I was like, oh, air conditioner. It was an air conditioner. It wasn't an airplane. So, you know, we can see that, you know, we can see the mind creating these recognitions and revising them as it gets more information. So this is just a process of something that we can see, but we're not actively trying to label here. We're just noticing what's happening. And, you know, if you happen to notice your mind doing this labeling, just be curious about it. If you find yourself actively involved in labeling, you know, doing it intentionally or engaged in it, and sometimes that can happen, the habit will come up of labeling, if you're familiar with that practice, the habit will arise. And then we jump on the bandwagon of the habit and start to do it. So if you find that you're actively doing it, you could see if you could back off of the activity of it, you know, just let go of that, of that activity, and just come back to just, you know, relax, recognize awareness and what's obvious. That was one question. This next question kind of follows a little bit. I think yesterday or this morning I talked about, I talked about a question. There was a question about hypervigilance in meditation. And this person asks, am I correct in concluding that receptive awareness is different than hypervigilance, in that hypervigilance is the mind scanning the environment for danger, and receptive awareness is more of a noticing of whatever is in the moment? So I would say that hypervigilance is a kind of, there is awareness in hypervigilance, but it is an awareness that's infused usually with fear, some kind of a sense of danger that it needs to, as this, you know, question says, kind of scan the environment to find out, you know, what to pay attention to. So that, you know, sometimes we have in our history some situations that have created conditions that hypervigilance can arise in certain situations. And so in those situations, the awareness may quite, in a very conditioned way, be, you know, just be conditioned to be infused with fear. And so this doesn't have to be, you know, this doesn't have to be, I mean, usually in those situations, we can't just say, stop the fear, you know, I'm just not going to have the fear. So what we can do there is just recognize, okay, fear is part of this experience. Can we recognize the kind of the hyper quality there, the piece of the searching for, the kind of having our radar out for. So there is awareness there, but there's also, we could say that the hyper part, the hypervigilance part, is an attitude that's infusing how we are being aware. And so we may be able to kind of recognize, okay, well, that hypervigilance is here. And we might be able to support ourselves in that if we can tell in this situation, you know, this is not a situation that needs the hypervigilance. You know, some situations do require, you know, kind of a very attentive, alert, you know, scanning the environment for potential danger. Some situations can be that way. And so if in this situation that you find yourself, that is not what's happening, you could kind of just remind yourself of that, but not try to dismiss the fear, right? I mean, it's like the fear is there at a very deep level. It's not, it's, you know, if there's a dismissing of that fear, it's going to be more of a repression than a real just like, oh yeah, it's not necessary right now, generally. So I would say that, you know, recognizing, okay, this fear is extra right now. So can I be curious about the experience of the fear? Maybe you can, maybe not. You know, sometimes those hypervigilant states can be very sticky, you know, that they can, if you try to be aware in a hypervigilant state, it's like the hypervigilance is just reinforcing itself. And so in that situation, you may try, you know, just opening your eyes, turning your attention to something more grounding, connecting with the body in the present moment, you know, finding ways to turn the attention to something that feels a little bit more safe or stable. You know, sometimes connecting with your body like this can help to ground the system a little bit. But yes, the receptive awareness is not a hypervigilance, But we can notice at times that that awareness is infused with other attitudes or relationships, including that kind of fear or anxiety. And so just noticing what's there with it. I struggle with making decisions and determining what's right or wrong when assessing an experience. Am I following my heart or my mind? These decisions often waver and depend on how others react. After listening to your talk the other day, I realized these decisions are driven by diversion and beliefs. I'm not sure I quite understand the diversion part, but driven by beliefs. What's the right thing to do? Perhaps out of fear. Why the confusion? If I follow my heart, why don't I know for sure? Why do I waver? It sounds to me like this is a pattern that's probably connected to, I mean, my guess is this is not just in meditation. This is probably a daily life experience for you. It's not just, in meditation, what should I do? Should I do this or this? Is there a wavering in meditation? That may be there, but my guess is that this is a more deep pattern. I myself experience this piece around decisions waver and depend on how others react. That is so familiar from my experience that we somehow are conditioned that we have to see how others are like the safest way to respond is to see how others are going to respond before you respond, to kind of like take in, like ha try to second guess how they're going to respond, to figure out what they want before I respond. I felt like I couldn't know what I wanted until I understood what people around me wanted. And so this sounds like a pattern that probably comes from conditioning, from history. And so it's a part of your experience. The wavering comes because of, it's, I can't give you explicit reasons why, but I can say that it's conditioned and that this practice can help you begin to understand, these questions that you ask, why is there confusion? Why don't I know for sure? Why do I waver? Being curious about the confusion, being curious about the uncertainty, being curious about wavering will begin to help you understand what's going on there. It's a path that needs courage, I would say, this practice that we're doing to begin to really investigate and, have some sense of willingness to be with all of these confusing and uncomfortable patterns that are revealed when we open our hearts and minds and see what's going on. We all have our own flavor of these patterns that are challenging and painful. And the practice here, as the Buddha said, as I said, I think earlier today, this is dukkha. This is suffering, this wanting things to be a certain way, needing to figure out how to be a certain way. This is dukkha. And the Buddha encouraged us to understand it, understanding it not in terms of figuring it out intellectually. Why am I like this? I've got to figure it out and dive into the middle of it and pull it apart and figure it out intellectually. The understanding that the Buddha offers and is talks about we need to support in our pr practice is the understanding of the naturalist, the understanding of the willingness to be with experience, to be with the confusion, to be with the wavering, to be with the uncertainty. All of these are in the terrain or realm of a particular state of mind, of doubt, confusion, uncertainty. And so get really familiar with that experience and see if there can be a little bit of okayness that you just know, like when you see this, when you see, oh, okay, there's wavering happening. Okay, wavering is happening. What is the experience of wavering itself? in meditation, we can step back from the need to make the decision itself and see, what is this wavering about? What is the sense of confusion, that uncertainty? What does it feel like? What is being believed with it? I think beliefs are really operating here. So that would be a really interesting question. Not only how does it feel to have that uncertainty, probably discomfort is very high. You know, when we have uncertainty, we don't like that uncertainty. And that's part of the reason why we want to figure out an answer. So seeing if there can be some level of okayness with the feeling of uncertainty, so that you can be with it. And then if you can be with it for a little bit, you know, even a few moments, what is being believed? You know, seeing, dropping in that question, what's believed here in this uncertainty? I have to get it right, maybe. You know, you even pointed to that one. I need to do it right. So that is a belief. And how strongly is it believed? So some exploration or sense of willingness to engage. And as I said, it can be challenging. It can take courage to meet these habits and patterns. It's not pleasant by any means, but it will bear fruit over time. It will help you to understand. And as I said earlier today, you know, the mindfulness has this capacity to, when we meet experience, when we meet something challenging like uncertainty and are willing to just be with it and feel the uncomfortableness of it and learn with it, the mind begins to understand how to let go of it. We usually can't figure that out. We usually can't do the letting go. Wisdom grows and develops, and wisdom knows how to let go. Wisdom knows how to navigate these struggles. And when we're mindful of qualities that are beautiful, of wholesome qualities, it tends to strengthen those qualities. So it's a very organic practice in a way, just being willing to be that naturalist sitting in the middle of the mess. Things begin to reveal themselves, things begin to release, things begin to be cultivated, helpful qualities begin to be cultivated.